Moncrief on News Talk. TV. On the radio.
Roll it there, cadet.
Hey, how you doing?
Bazinga.
Well, I didn't expect the kind of Spanish Inquisition.
One for everybody in the audience.
It's going to be legendary.
You just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
Sura is a hospital pharmacist and lives in West London with her husband Chad and their cat, Ghost.
What's that?
She'll have to transform her overflowing sponges into a lemon and orange Battenberg, complete with mini marzipan fruits.
I feel sorry for whoever's going to clean up after me.
Hello, Sura. You were a little bit nervous earlier, weren't you? You were thinking about starting again.
Yeah, I wouldn't have the time.
Well, you wouldn't have the time. Are you a Battenberg fan? Will you be trying your own cake, or are you just like, no, I'm not doing it?
I'm so over cake, because I've been tasting it and trying it out.
Really?
Yeah, I don't want to eat any more cake ever again.
You might be on the wrong show, Sora.
Yeah, I know.
There you go. Bake Off is back, though, I suppose, in changed forms in many ways. Really, James Dempsey joins us once again. We heard Matt Lucas there. How's he doing?
I thought he was good. Yeah, like, I mean, look, it's very hard to base anything off just one episode, right? Mm. And in any given year, I would be reluctant even to pick Bake Off as a show to talk about on this slot, because in 11 seasons, you know, normally, what news could I bring?
Yes.
Except for it moved to Channel 4 and then there was a new presenter, a new guest. And admittedly, there is a new presenter, but obviously there's a pandemic as well, which adds an extra dynamic to it. But I have to admit, it was very nice TV to watch last night, or to watch rather on Tuesday night, because it was so comforting and straightforward. And I think it really spoke to the kind of enduringness of that show, that the participants this time round are competing in, like, Bake Off meets Hunger Games, right?
Yes.
Because they are living... It normally takes 12 weeks to film, and they film on the weekends.
Mm.
This was filmed in 6 weeks over the summer, and they all live together in a hotel for the duration of the show.
Right, okay, yeah.
The cast of contestants, the crew, the presenters, the judges, they became their own self-sustaining pod. And I saw a tweet of someone saying that, like, it adds this extra dimension to it that, you know, it was taking place during the summer, and if you fail to make it to the next week, you were released into the wild.
Back into the disease, the zombie town. Right? Yeah. So, I wonder would that affect the quality as well, because then, you know, in the previous model, people were able to go home and
practice
for a week.
What I've always wondered is if they get given some kind of budget, right? Because, like, obviously practicing incurs a financial risk, or not real, a financial cost anyway. And this time around, I presume they were doing it in this hotel kitchen, or maybe they, you know, brought in induction hobs into different spare rooms, whatever, right? But yeah, this time around, what was perhaps most striking was it had all the hallmarks of typical Bake Off, right? Well, Park Matt, with the exception of Matt Lucas, who I thought was a perfectly good host, nice, warm, genial, bit odd and funny, ticks all the boxes, right?
Yeah.
Mel and Sue still have a place in my heart, but I'll take Noel and Matt happily. The contestants were the usual ragtag of, like, wry comment, oopsie daisy, make a mistake, like, lovable Brit, etc., blah, 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 right? So it ticks all of those boxes. What I thought odd this time around was they gave them a showstopper, which is, like, the finale big challenge of all. So bizarre and difficult that it was like something out of Netflix's Nailed It, right? So they had a lovely make a Battenberg, that was fine, grand. Then they had the technical make a pineapple upside down cake. It's a rare instance when you even know what the technical is, so that's grand.
Yeah.
And then the final one was make a bust, like, you know, make someone's head out of cake, right? And to be honest, I think even in a normal schedule, It would be a bad challenge anyway.
Yeah.
In this, it was laughably bad. I mean, these cakes were some of the worst they have
That's
ever...
That's a sculpture challenge.
Yes,
not a baking
exactly.
Yeah.
These were some of the worst they ever made. nobody even likes fondant icing anyway, so yeah. They're never, these cakes are never going to taste good, and they, most of them looked appalling. And it was good fun, yeah. I must admit.
And was it, I actually haven't seen it yet, with the social distancing, I suppose that wasn't, would it be much of a challenge given that they did that anyway?
Yeah, because they did this super pod, everyone is, it's hugs and handshakes.
Ah,
and
right. Okay.
Admittedly, there was no Paul Hollywood, well, sorry for the spoiler. There was no Paul Hollywood handshake in week one, but that would be a big ask anyway.
Yeah.
But I guess we can expect a handshake to come even though Britain has got into big lockdown. And yeah. It's probably mixed messaging. But what I also thought was quite interesting about this is, if anyone at home listens to like US cultural podcasts, Bake Off, and it's known in the US as the
Great British Baking Show, yeah,
because Pillsbury Dough owns the trademark of Bake Off. It has become huge in the US. Mm. So huge that it's now, this season is being released 3 days after it airs in the UK on Netflix as a like event kind
Crikey.
Of thing. And I think it's quite, I mean, well, it's not that surprising, right? It has charmed the UK. It has charmed Ireland. As viewers of the UK version, there are international versions of it all over the world. There was a somewhat failed US version, but you don't need a US version because there already is like an English language one, right? Mm. And Americans have really taken it to their hearts as well as Canadians. And I just thought it was quite fitting that, or well, quite remarkable, because we usually think of those kinds of things coming the other way across the Atlantic, that this was such a big, you know, that it is now such a culturally significant thing that it really is like, it's a must watch, yeah. Basically, everywhere in the English speaking world.
Yeah, and I know it's a hideous cliche, but you know, the sort of comfort telly you want, yeah. During a pandemic.
Defo, yeah, absolutely.
And were there people in there that you thought, that person's definitely going to last the course? I don't know how that guy even got in on the show.
There was one who, let's put it this way, the person who was eliminated week one took me more by surprise than I was expecting. I kind of had my expectation that it would be someone else.
Mm.
There was no immediate standout of brilliance. There was one who you're like, this guy is definitely going to be way too ambitious every
yeah.
single time,
yeah.
And just see it failing spectacularly.
I love those ones. Yeah. They're always the best ones. Right, a few bits of TV news, and The Den's going to come back.
Yeah, so this is really surprising. I guess you have to think that RTE has a bit of a schedule gap this autumn winter because Dancing with the Stars would normally be going in. Although this is, I think that usually starts in January and this is starting in November. But seemingly it was the 33rd anniversary of Zig and Zag being on The Den, which I imagine was Dempsey's Den back then.
Yeah.
And they basically announced on that day that they and Ray and Zuppy and Dustin are all going to reappear at a 6:30 slot, which is kind of prime time on Sunday. You know, it's post, like tea time is a big TV time, right?
Yeah.
Sunday night from November 8th, I think. And they're going to have a somewhat nostalgia ridden, all fun for all the family magazine type show. Now, who knows what this is going to be, right? Because
yeah.
What was The Den but piecing together cartoons?
Yeah, it was right? A continuity slot.
It was a continuity
yes.
slot.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ray Darcy, I watched him every day after school because he was on from like 1990 to 1998. And these were very formative TV watching years of my lifetime. So I'm intrigued to see where it'll go. I was somewhat saddened to see that Socky was nowhere in the mix. Socky the Sock Monster must
be. It may be in negotiations.
Perhaps. But yeah, coming back on November 8th.
And have they said for how long of a run?
If they have, I failed to write it down in my notes.
Right, okay. But presumably that it is a run. That means
it is a run, definitely.
Yeah.
I guess there was a somewhat proof of concept when RTE did Comic Relief or
yeah,
Comic Relief
sure.
does RTE, whatever. Yeah. And they had that slot and it became a big international thing because they were mocking Niall Horan on
yes.
it. His stands didn't get it and it caused a few column inches. So look, there was good proof of concept then that this could kind of work. And I guess it probably is a good time to get good guests because they can tap into nostalgia of millennials, right?
And it was never a big budget show anyway, so
ideal, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, okay,
why not?
That may well work. Right, the West Wing reunion. Now I suppose this is two stories in one. The West Wing reunion is happening, but
yeah.
The Friends one isn't.
Yes, so the Friends one has been shelved indefinitely, but like, reunion is totally, I think, the wrong nomenclature for
yeah.
both of these things. Because the Friends reunion is them sitting on couches talking about earning $1 million an episode.
Yeah.
Right? And so the West Wing reunion is, I don't know if it's a new script, but it's just a table read of a script.
Yeah,
right?
I think it's an old script.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what is novel to it is that it isn't. So they've announced the date, and it's going to be, I think, the 15th of October, so like 2 weeks roughly before the US election. What is new to it is that in the breaks between acts, because if you remember watching The West Wing, there was like act, you know, a title card for each act yeah. of the teleplay, we'll say. In the breaks between acts, there's going to be commentary by Presidents Obama and Clinton, and then also Lin-Manuel Miranda of Hamilton.
Sorry,
fame.
2 weeks before the election. I wonder which way this is leaning.
Yeah, right. So what I didn't realize is Lin-Manuel Miranda is like a super fan of The West Wing, and I have seen Hamilton. I watched it when it debuted on Disney Plus, like my mother would, with subtitles on, because I was like, I don't know what anyone is saying. And seemingly there are loads of references to The West Wing in Hamilton, which went way over my head because I missed every one of them. But anyway, he's a super fan. He's also going to appear, and it'll have all the principal cast, and it's going to be like not just a table read, but not an episode, put it that way.
Right.
It's somewhere in between.
Yeah. And why haven't they gone ahead with the Friends one? Because you would have thought, you know,
easy pickings.
In.
Yeah. I don't know, to be honest. They it has just been shelved indefinitely. But there can't have been some major falling out, certainly not between the women, because at the Emmys, which were like, you know, screened from home, Jennifer Aniston was nominated for Best Actress for The Newsroom. No, what's it called? Good Morning.
The Morning Show.
The Morning Show. Thank you. And she was with Courtney Cox and Lisa Kudrow. They were like watching together.
Yeah, okay, yeah. It's an odd one. Did you do the Duchess last week?
Yeah.
I must say I'm in episode 5 and I
are you
like
waiting
it
for it to take off?
I like it less and less as it goes along. In fact, I don't like her.
I think the most likable person is the Australian dentist.
Yeah. Yeah, and even he, I find increasingly I'm screaming at him, "What are you doing with her? She's evil." Yeah. All right. Okay, we do have two more shows to talk about after this.
You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. James Dempsey is still with us. Before the break, James was talking to us about the Great British Bake Off, which is back now on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. on Channel 4. There you can catch up on all four. And as James was saying, it's kind of comforting that it's back, if you're a fan, of course. I hope Channel 4 do a documentary about the 6 weeks they spent together in the hotel. As James was telling us, it's being shot. It was shot over a more limited period of time, and they kind of basically all cocooned together. Yes, that would be interesting if they did do that. I wouldn't be surprised at all. I assume this is one of the people taking part. Is it? Yes, it is, right. Sura is one of the people taking part. Despite the incident... Ooh, there's an incident. Despite the incident, she is great. Funny, dry and quite good. She's my current front runner. But look, it's early doors. I won't commit, says Porik. But I think you did commit there, Porik. But, you know, as you say, it is early doors. As we were saying, as James was telling us, Matt Lucas is the new presenter. He's now replacing Sandy Toksvig. Matt Lucas was like wallpaper, says his texter. He didn't add anything. Just have Noel. No need for a second presenter. The Bake Off came at a perfect time. I literally danced around the house getting myself ready for it. Best show on TV, says Sue, and she points out that it's not of Mel and Sue. That would be weird if Sue of Mel and Sue was texting into us. So glad James said he couldn't understand Hamilton. I thought it was just me, couldn't watch it. Gave me a headache, says the texter, and James just mentioned that in passing because he was talking about The West Wing. They're going to transmit this. It's essentially a table read of one episode of The West Wing, and it will feature the creator of Hamilton because they were a big, huge fan of The West Wing. Lara says, I caught an episode of The West Wing recently on television. It really has not aged well. The music is awful. They all look a bit hazy or something. Would that be the camera? It was of its time, not for a more modern audience. The dialogue even annoyed me, and I used to love it. Oh, well, says Lara. Well, it's interesting, though, because I know a lot of people would still watch it as it's the kind of their comfort watch in the same way that they would watch Friends, for instance. But the dialogue where you'll have a scene where someone's walking down a corridor with somebody and they deliver some 2,000-word monologue about the nature of electoral politics in Peru or something. And you go, how do they even know that off the top of their head? And that was the nature of that particular beast, all right, and that did regard a bit of suspension of disbelief. As for it being hazy, now it was shot on 35mm camera on old-fashioned film. That's what they used to shoot things on. So it wouldn't have been in high def, but maybe I suppose it was lit in a slightly darker hue. I suppose that was kind of deliberate. So maybe that's where the haziness comes from. Either that, or you just need to clean your own television. Anyway, time to move on to our second show of the day. It's Ratched. All 8 episodes of season 1 are now streaming on Netflix. Here's a clip.
Oh, here's that map you asked for, ma'am.
Thank you.
May I ask why you're headed to Lucia?
It seems like a rather personal question now, doesn't it?
Sorry.
Clearly, your tumescence has distracted you, sir. I recall asking for today's local paper.
Oh, sorry. Here you go. Yeah, it's big news around here. Everybody's up in arms. Fella cuts up a bunch of priests and they ship him up to Lucia. Hey, that's where you're headed. You're not some sort of journalist or something, are you?
You should bathe more often. Your fingernails are filthy.
That's Ratched. All 8 episodes of season 1 are streaming now on Netflix. Good cast.
Amazing cast, yeah.
Is this an origin story?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of Nurse Ratched of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm not going to say I'm some expert in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I'm not. I saw it once.
Yeah. Right?
But, like, people know Nurse Ratched. She's this infamous, like, movie villain.
Yeah.
Right? But, like, this is not... So it's not for me to say that this isn't Nurse Ratched because, you know, it's anyone can create their own origin story of her. But like, if you ask me, this is so disconnected from that film that it is a completely different story altogether. And this, to me, is just like another season of American Horror Story, right? Which is a Ryan Murphy vehicle starring Sarah Paulson. It could be exactly the same thing because it's this campy, gothic, violent horror, you know, bloody... drama set at an asylum. And we already got one of those one time round with American Horror Story, one of the better ones, admittedly. But this, for me, the thing is, as you said, the cast is like so good that it's never bad, but it's not satisfying and it's not good to watch, certainly not in the 4 episodes that I've watched anyway. So here's the thing about Nurse Ratched. If you watch, and from my memory, and I went on YouTube last night to watch some clips about Nurse Ratched. Mm. The whole point of Nurse Ratched is she is this queen bee of the mental ward that she works in. And she basically exerts her power by manipulation. Whereas in this, you have Sarah Paulson's Nurse Ratched like going around almost maiming, you know, violently attacking people kind of thing, right?
Right.
And
no.
That's completely disconnected from Louise Fletcher's Nurse Ratched, who is this
who
menacing...
crushes people's spirits.
Yes. Yeah. Through relentless, like, it's like, she's like a despot. Like, she's like, she runs the ward as her own and it's her way or no way.
Mm.
Whereas this is a completely different story altogether. Now, you have Sarah Paulson playing Nurse Mildred Ratched, and the story takes place, I think, in 1947 in a psychiatric hospital in Lucia or St. Lucia in California, and it involves a murderous serial killer who at the very beginning kills several priests in very graphic, violent ways. And he is going to this psychiatric hospital, and there's a subplot involving the governor of California. There's a second subplot, him and his secretary, rather, who's played by Cynthia Nixon of Sex and the City fame. Then there's another subplot involving the doctor in this hospital, who's Dr. Hanover, who's actually an actor I don't know at all. And another subplot with him involving Sharon Stone and her son. And there's so many fingers in so many pies, and it all looks absolutely stunning, right? Mm. And even like this, the production is fantastic in terms of costuming and set design and music. You know, you hear all of these kind of soundtracks from like very famous, you know, neo-noir kind of movies of the 1950s and 40s. And it all looks and it is very, you know, it's lavishly boring, right? That's the problem, right? Like there's just not enough substance to it. And the plot I can't really give away because it would be somewhat spoilery, but Mildred is trying to work her way into the hospital for a reason that will become apparent very, very clearly. What annoyed me the most about it was how predictable I found each of the episodes.
Oh,
like,
dear.
As in, I could see exactly where it was going each and every time. And that was just really an unsatisfactory watch. And the funny thing about it is, right, so Ryan Murphy has had this big, massive, like hundreds of million dollar deal with Netflix. I think somewhere in the region of $300 million. For me, every show he's made for them so far has been unsatisfying. I didn't like Hollywood, but it was lavish.
Yeah.
I didn't like this, but it was lavish. You know, you can keep throwing money at the problem and produce these lavish shows, but they're just not very satisfying to watch.
So this is there's going to be a second series then.
There is. It was greenlit for two
God. Already.
And as look, I saw someone tweeting like maybe he just wrote this for an excuse for all these actresses to hang out with each other. And,
sure.
And sure. Like, and as I said, the caliber of people in it is amazing, right? Mm. Like Sarah Paulson, Judy Davis, Sharon Stone, Cynthia Nixon, right? Like these big American actresses with a capital A. Well, Judy Davis is Australian, but they are... they bring it. I mean, they work the script, but the script is nothing.
Okay, so Ryan's the problem.
Ryan's the problem.
It's not us, it's you. Right, our final show is also streaming on Netflix. It's Challenger, The Final Flight. And here's a clip.
I thought the flight was going fine. And then I heard them say, major malfunction. And then the person beside me said, it's exploded. And it was, I couldn't speak. It was
seven really brilliant and beautiful people got killed.
I was shocked. Reminded me a lot of President Kennedy's death in 63. I don't know where the analogy comes, but it was a national tragedy.
The silence is deafening. There is no word from NASA, no word from the rescue vehicles, No word whatsoever on what may have happened.
Right, okay, there's Challenger, The Final Flight. Four episodes, given that, you know, pretty much everybody will know what happened.
Mm.
There's no tension in this then, or
and
is there?
I mean, it's overt from the get-go, right? Because in episode one, the first 5 minutes are pretty much dealing with the explosion.
Mm.
What this does very well... I mean, I knew a little bit about the Christa McAuliffe teacher in space part.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, she's the only name of the seven people that people would remember, right? Because she's the unusual one.
Yeah.
And it is such an unusual tragedy that they, you know, they ran this teacher in space program to basically rejuvenate interest in the space program. And she trained for like 2 years, and then basically school children all across America are watching as she dies live on TV, right? And they do that extremely well. But they also go into great depth about NASA, right? And about the space shuttle program in general. And the first episode tells you a lot about the other six astronauts who were on the shuttle as well, and how it was such an interesting mission because it had like the first Asian-American astronaut, an African-American astronaut, another woman astronaut. And it's even interesting that the first shuttle launch that takes place after, which I think was 1988, 2 years later, is all, you know, all white men and all sort of waspy men, and that they had tried deliberately to move away from that, you know, throughout the beginning of the shuttle program and then went straight back into it. It's not a perfect documentary. I will say it did not keep everyone in my household as gripped as it kept me. I thought it was very, very fascinating, but not everybody not everybody agrees with me. But I think it could be trimmed here and there. There are parts of it that are a bit too long and you're kind of like, okay, move on, move on, move on. And then when they get to the finale episode, which is about kind of apportioning blame, it's very clear where the blame lies with this. And there's a very interesting point to be made about how there was a public hearing about this, and the word from the White House was, do not make NASA look bad, because we are still going to need NASA in the long run. They need to come out of this with a PR win. But NASA were completely and utterly to blame, because there's this very technical reason of what went wrong. And did they expect this to happen? No. Were they alerted that this may happen? Yes. Right. And there is negligence on the part of NASA. And you're kind of watching it going, why aren't you kind of raking NASA a bit more over the coals here? Because this is really, you know, this is negligence on their part. They totally mess this up. why aren't you, you know, kind of like stick the knife in a bit? And it does a little bit, but it sort of pulls back. There's a very famous...
Maybe needed NASA for cooperation.
Well,
for
that's
this.
Probably true, yeah. There's a very famous Blacklist script, which is like an unproduced script by a woman named Nicole Perlman, who wrote Guardians of the Galaxy. That's how she got into the MCU. Yeah. And it's called Challenger. It's online as well. If you're the kind of person who's interested in reading, you know, unproduced movie scripts, it's well worth seeking out, because it's about... the Nobel laureate. He's a physicist who didn't even want his Nobel Prize. His name is Richard Feynman, who ultimately did a load of shenanigans to kind of hoodwink NASA into admitting their guilt. Well, I mean, that is the most interesting part of the whole documentary for me. It's very sad what happened to the seven astronauts. The parts with Christopher McAuliffe are very sad. Interviewing their families, very sad. Bit laboured, in my opinion, but obviously very, very, very sad. But then the kind of the juicy part of kind of catching out NASA in their negligence is a bit underplayed for my liking. And I kind of think they missed just the mark on that part.
OK, that makes it a damn sight more interesting than I thought it would be, actually. So that's pretty good. James Dempsey, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Moncrief on News Talk.